Welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talk to Liz Hales, who is part of the group Guelph Tiny Homes Coalition. We've heard a lot about tiny homes lately as the housing crisis has only gotten worse, but they've been a thing for a while. On the one hand, there's the idea of living somewhere small and basic, skewering popular ideas about how the size of one's living quarters is directly tied to one's happiness and measure of success. On the other hand, it's the idea of creating housing for people in need, someplace that ensures their privacy and allows them to create a place to call their own. So somehow, tiny homes are both a niche real estate trend and a new innovation in accommodating Canada's unhoused population. But it's the latter that we're interested in talking about today. Going tiny is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. In Kitchener, there was an idea called a Better Tent City. In 2020, various community partners teamed up to turn an industrial lot into a community of tiny homes that would offer low-barrier housing with access to hygiene and sanitation facilities, plus connection to services and healthcare on a path to stable housing. It also offered people a couple of other things, including community. You're essentially building a neighborhood and developing relationships with people as you all have that housing stability, and it also gives opportunity for shelter to people who typically have to avoid using traditional shelters. People who have partners, for instance, or people who have companion animals, neither of which are allowed in your typical traditional municipal shelter. The success of Kitchener's A Better Tent City has been an inspiration for communities around Ontario and across Canada, and that includes Guelph. The idea of a structured encampment in this city has been making the rounds almost as long as Kitchener's version has been open, and last fall, council punted a discussion about setting one up to the Health and Housing Symposium that took place at the end of January and will continue next week with its third day. Mayor Cam Guthrie used his strong mayor powers to direct city staff to start to develop a plan for Guelph's own Better Tent City style encampment, and while that plan is in process, a group called the Guelph Tiny Homes Coalition had announced that they had already started their own project. It's made up of healthcare and addiction specialists, faith community representatives, business representatives, home builders, community organizers, and people with lived experience. And the group is out to prove that a housing-first solution is the best solution. But how do you build a project like this from the ground up? Liz Hales, the appointed representative for this project, will join us on this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast to talk about the reasons she wanted to take part in this project as a nurse practitioner, the paradigm-changing idea that housing is healthcare, and why having a permanent place to live is key to assuring a proper recovery from medical procedures. We will also discuss who all is on this team, what they're doing right now in terms of organizing, and what kind of help they're looking for, and when they're looking for it. And finally, Hales will tell us about the inadequacies of the shelter system as it stands right now, combating NIMBYism, and what the finished project will look like when it's ready to open. So I caught up with Liz Hales last week via Zoom. Okay, Liz Hales, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
To start off with, your profession is that you are a nurse practitioner. And so it may surprise some people that we're talking about essentially home development and home construction. And so I guess the first most obvious question is, why is a nurse involved in building a tiny home project?
Right. Good question. Well, I work as a primary healthcare nurse practitioner, and lots of the folks that I work with find themselves underhoused or homeless, and I work in Guelph. And I work from a harm reduction model, and that's very client-centered. So knowing that people are not able to access our existing shelter is something that I'm aware of every day. And it was just kind of coming to a point where I needed to do something. And so, I think housing definitely is a healthcare issue, and certainly one that affects all the clients that I see.
Mm-hmm. I want to just dig deeper into something you said there, that, you know, people can't access the shelter system. And I know, and I think we kind of get caught in our silos in this, like when we talk to each other about this, that we know the reasons why, but for the average person, what is it about the shelter system as it stands right now that is lacking? And you know, what are some of the reasons why some of the people you talk to and some of the people you treat feel like they can't go to a shelter?
Right. Well, first of all, we have really limited shelter beds here in Guelph. So that's one thing. We don't have enough. And another is there are lots of reasons around access. So people, you know, agencies have to have rules. Some are more flexible than others. So, you know, when you're trying to meet someone who, say, has a partner that wants to access a shelter together, that's not possible right now. It's not possible to bring your dog, whether that's if it's not a designated service animal. And lots of people do have pets that are definitely companions, and I would say are a service animal, even though if they're not recognized legitimately. Hours, not having a place to actually live. So the shelter, you know, people have to leave in the morning and take all of their belongings and then wander around all day until time to line up for a bed again. So this is an alternative kind of a model. It's one that will fit into a larger, you know, scenario where we have many different kinds of housing options for people.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
No, it is. And I think, you know, just to sort of give it straight to people who may not understand the sort of why shelters don't work, because I in appreciating your point too, that we only have limited shelter space too, I think when I started digging into this issue, I was surprised. I just want the limitations, and, you know, that comes from a place of privilege, obviously, but just, you know, even if you are just on your own, and you don't have a service animal or an animal companion, you know, there is that whole piece of it that you don't really have a place to live. You have a place to sleep, but you don't have a place to live.
No, you don't have a place to live. And yes, and there are rules that you have to abide by, whereas if you had your own space, you can choose to come and go as you please. You can have, you know, you can do what you like in your own space. So, yeah.
From your point of view and from your years of experience, I mean, the problems we're talking about with the shelter system aren't new. But I mean, it feels like new that, like, we're kind of addressing them for the first time, that even just the problem of, like, you're only there for 8 hours out of a 24 hour day. That seems like a problem that's long been needed solving.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think things have gotten a lot worse since COVID. Mm. I think that's really increased, you know, people lost jobs. People's mental health suffered. So I think more people are finding themselves precariously housed and underhoused or homeless. And recently in Guelph, we did have a building that that was sold. And so we had, I'm not sure of the number, but I'm going to estimate, say, like 150 people who were housed there are now homeless. Because we don't have enough geared to income housing, we don't have enough transitional housing, we don't have those various different models that would help people with mental health and addictions be somewhere to get stabilized.
Right, and you're talking about 90 Carden, which I mean came with it a number of issues, but I mean, at least there people had a roof over their heads.
True. And I recently did, I was talking about this at the Breezy Breakfast, that for anybody that had been in there, I mean, it wasn't anywhere that most people would really want to live. It was, but as you say, people were sheltered. People had a place to sleep and it was their home.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about tiny homes generally. When we talk about a tiny home, and perhaps in specific reference to this project that you're trying to help get off the ground, you know, what does that look like? What is a tiny home? Just the building itself, what does that look like?
Okay, it's going to be a wooden building that has some really good insulation to withstand, you know, our winters. It's going to be about just under 160 square feet. And it will have a bed. Some will be for couples and some will be singles. So there'll be a bed, there'll be a chair, likely a little desk and heating, and maybe a fan, something for cooling. And then there will be a communal kitchen, laundry and bathroom facilities, and shared area to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in this initial part of the project, how many tiny homes are we talking?
So we're talking 50.
50.
Mm-hmm.
Which is there like an expected sort of population? Like, because you, as you said, some will be for couples, some will be for singles.
Yeah. So we being this group that naturally came together, this group of community members, we did a tour of Better Tent City in Kitchener.
Mm-hmm.
And we really liked it. So we're kind of going for that kind of model with some, you know, learning from what they would like to do differently. And they have anywhere like 150, they have 50 homes, and they said they probably have anywhere from 150 to 200 people on site every day.
Wow.
Because people have either partners or friends, or so there's extra folk around.
Maybe somebody they're putting up for a night or visitor or something. Yeah. You said you were kind of learning the lessons from A Better Tent City. I think that's sort of been universally acclaimed as a successful project. But I mean, you know, everything's a learning opportunity. So, I mean, what are their challenges that you saw, and how are you trying to address that with this project?
Yeah, I think when I'm saying that, when I say that, their road to getting to where they are today, so where they started out and the land that they were on, you know, they learned from having land that's already serviced is important. So they learned as they went.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really evolved over these 4 years. So, you know, now they have, I believe, a social worker part-time that works there.
Mm.
Now they have, initially, I'm not sure if community members were strongly encouraged to get involved with some of the like stuff in the community. So that's now an expectation.
Mm.
Some, you know, community development kinds of things to help people create the kind of place that they want to live. And they didn't start with 50. I think initially they had 12 and then they gradually added. I think always they had Nadine. So we also have learned some things that work really well. We're looking, this is what we need. We need our own Nadine. So somebody that will be a site coordinator. I mean, if the person could live there, that would be ideal. Like Nadine lives at Better Tent City because she's really the glue there and really knows everyone and is fabulous. Yeah.
And I mean, you said we kind of need our own Nadine, but, you know, to borrow a phrase, Nadines don't grow on trees. I mean, she was a shop owner that saw people around her store and just started helping out. Like she.
Yeah.
I don't know what her formal education or training is, but I don't think it was for what she's doing right now.
No, definitely isn't. Yeah, no. And she would not be. Yeah, I don't know how you would find another Nadine. I totally agree. So it will be some iteration of a person that will be a site coordinator.
Right. Yeah. Can you talk a bit about the group? You said this group kind of came together naturally. I mean, you know, there's, you know, people involved in social work. There's people like you who are in the medical field. There, you know, other community members, people from the faith community. How do all these people naturally congregate together?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So how did we come together? My partner went to was at a Rotary meeting and happens to be, you know, we're always talking about, I come home and talk about my day and how, you know, I wish there was something we could do. Happened to be talking to this person about housing. And he said, oh, you know, I'm really interested too. I have a business and I also have a charity and we do work abroad, but we'd like to do something closer to home. His, you know, he has a good friend who's a home builder. Who is the person who has already drafted some, you know, roughed up some sketches for the houses. So he's involved in my work. I work with folks who, peer workers who have lived experience. And so it's just natural for me to say, hey, are you guys interested? Yes, there were some people that were interested. Work with the Royal City Mission. So we know those folks. And we've also had some, because I've lived in Guelph for 25 years and, you know, we're sort of politically minded and care about the community. We have some, we know some city councilors. And so we've had, some advice from them and some assistance in terms of, you know, how to navigate that world. So it just, it kind of came together really naturally and organically. And I also work with, we have the drug strategy person is involved. So that's really great. Who's really well-versed in housing first. So yeah, it's just, here we all are.
And just to be clear, there is a separate similar project that is sort of happening under the auspices of the city of Guelph. So there are like now kind of two projects similar in intent kind of going right now.
Yeah. So when we all came together in January, so it wasn't that long ago, we did speak with the city, the office of the mayor. And they've known about, you know, our intentions. And we also have expressed an interest in municipal lands, if there's any municipal owned land, because we, you know, a partnership with the city would be amazing. City's not really involved in housing right now, but we were thinking, you know, that would be a good thing. And so I know that the mayor has announced a structured encampment. So I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. But I would say, well, number one, there's certainly the need for more than 50 tiny homes.
Right.
We need lots of different models. And we're absolutely wanting to work, you know, with the city. So I wouldn't, it's not either or, it's, I don't think. And we're, you know, still relatively early days. We're still interested in working with the mayor and council for sure. Although we have a deadline of the fall. We want to get some houses built before the winter.
Okay. I just, you know, you have kind of two similar-ish projects sort of being guided under different groups. I guess the worry is like, and it does sound like there's some communication back and forth, but I just, you know, you're right. We need more than the 50 or more than, you know, more than one project going at the same time. But I mean, is there some concern that, you know, you could be duplicating efforts and that people will confuse one project for the other if they are kind of, you know, different in their own unique ways that, you know, you're kind of, going to be walking over each other's feet if you're not careful?
Yeah, am I worried about that? I think as long as something gets done, right? I would say that this, you know, the group that's come together were experienced in client-centeredness and harm reduction and trauma-informed work. and kind of get what some of the issues are in terms of accessibility for folks that are right, that need it. So I think we've got a really good model. I think this could be really fabulous, whether we partner and, you know, it sort of morphs into this is the housing, the tiny homes community that gets the green light. Not being, you know, I'm not privy to everything that's going on with the mayor, but from what we've done, I mean, I know that there's a lot of work that goes into the planning, and we as a group are very nimble because we're not beholden to any, you know, processes and this, like the city would have to be. I think that'll be, I can't imagine a city project having homes ready for the fall. I could be mistaken, but I think that we don't have the same sort of structure that we have to get a lot of permission, certainly building permits and all of those official things. But I just think we can move a little quicker.
Okay. This is kind of, I want to get into sort of where the project is right now in a sec, but I do want to kind of touch on these kind of more issue oriented things too, which, and one of them is, and you know, I've been thinking a lot about this is, we have a lot of stuff that's falling on community groups and like, just like really active sort of community members. And like people are driven by passion and not necessarily for, you know, getting rich or whatever it is, you know, that sort of drives people. But at the same time, I mean, we're kind of seeing more and more fall in a smaller number of groups. I mean, and here you are as a nurse with a full-time job. You know, Gene Hopkins, who also has a full-time job and very important full-time job. Everybody else, like Kevin Coghill at you know, Royal City, which is constantly swimming upstream against such tremendous pressures. I mean, I guess I don't know what the question is exactly, but I mean, is there not the concern that we're kind of biting off more than we can chew, just like generally, as not just you specifically or Kevin specifically, but just like as a community, we're being forced to just carry so much, and at what point do our arms just sort of give out and everything drops?
Well, for sure it is a lot of work. Absolutely. I'm optimistic in thinking that it won't always be, because we're just a few people, and there's, you know, without having really launched ourselves super officially yet, like this will happen in the next few weeks. We've had so many people reach out on the website saying that they want to volunteer, they want to donate, so there's lots of people that want to get involved. So we're going to have some operations teams that will be headed up by people other than, you know, us. Or maybe some of us and, you know, other people doing a lot of the work. The other piece there too is there's something about a grassroots, like really client driven. So, you know, having voices of people that have been here, and we have plans to involve some people with living experience. That doesn't happen when it's more of a structured, like, you know, whether it's municipal or another organization, right? When we saw the houses, the tiny houses in Waterloo on Herb Street, those are also partially, now I'm not going to remember where the funding is from, but there is some other funding and attachment to a larger community group. It didn't feel as like, I don't know, I would like, there's more rules. There's more, it was a little more institutional. So maybe having a group, you know, trying to raise the voice of people that need the service, and being able to do that outside of a fixed structure will result in a product that really meets people's needs. Is my hope.
People are more inclined to trust maybe their community nurse than they are to trust their city councilor. And there could be like a myriad of reasons for that, but just like, you know, dealing with, you know, your nurse or your caseworker or your social worker, that they're coming from a place of dealing with you and not dealing with a bureaucracy.
Yeah. And your outreach worker who has lived experience, who you trust, you really trust.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good point that there is, I mean, in so much as, you know, our politicians want to talk about knocking down barriers, but, you know, barriers kind of can exist incidentally, whether they intend to or not.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's where it's the invisible barriers. Mm. And it's the kind of like when people experience stigma, like I mean, I certainly make mistakes. I, you know, might use the wrong word or, and, you know, being willing to say, oh my gosh, yeah, sorry, backtrack a bit, like really, you know, just being human with folks, it goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about where things sit right now. You mentioned we're a couple of weeks from sort of like a quote unquote official launch. Although we've been talking about this for months but, you know, you talked about people drawing up sketches. There's an active search for land. So just where is the project at right now? And I guess what are kind of the steps coming up that the benchmarks that you're looking to meet as the next few weeks or next few months are rolling on to, as we're trying to get to having something ready for the fall?
Yeah. So right now we're doing a lot of things concurrently. So we're incorporating, which should happen imminently. We'll then try to establish ourselves as a charitable organization. That will happen. And we're trying to build relationships. So trying to raise the profile of the project and to really get people to want it. Mm. And so depending where it's going to be located, and that's also happening imminently, is that this look for the perfect place, you know, if it is in an area where there are other people living, it's really important to build relationship with folks.
Right.
So doing that, the site, finding the site is pretty key. And then honestly, talking to some of the, like Alan Remley is one of the he's the builder. Mm. And some of the other people are, you know, once we have the land and we're ready to go, we're just going to do it. So then we'll build these little houses. And I did say at one point, sort of tongue in cheek, you know, sometimes you go ahead and do things and then ask for forgiveness later.
Right.
Not in terms of, you know, servicing and water and sewage, but I think we'll just move ahead as quickly as we can.
Forget what the question I was going to ask here was, but I'll move on to the other one, which is, there is that concern. I think you mentioned kind of wherever it's going to end up, there will likely be neighbors. And I do remember when Grace Gardens was announced, and it was kind of like in the middle of a city council meeting that was completely unrelated to the project. Gail got up and was talking about it, and that was kind of like a shock to the system. And I mean, even if you're building like a fourplex in a neighborhood of single, like you're going to get your NIMBYs out.
Yeah.
I just like how proactive are you going to be wanting to be? And I guess, is there a concern that, I mean, we've kind of gotten through three or four different supportive housing projects. So it's not a boogeyman, if we can use that expression, but I mean, I guess how proactive are you, do you want to make sure that, because I think, you know, people taking concerns up through official channels could have a significant delay on how fast you guys want to do this.
Yeah. So we take it really seriously. I mean, we don't really have a concrete, you know, plan or method, but we definitely are going to put some attention to this because, you know, once you get to know some folks, we're all, you know, humans. We've all got families. We all have parents. I've met such resilient, creative, strong people in the work that I do. And you would be lucky to have them for neighbors. I mean, really. And I say that in all honesty. I think that people will be fortunate to have some of these people living nearby. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen down the road. We're hoping that there, you know, maybe there will be a community garden. Maybe there'll be, you know, food that comes out of it. Maybe there'll be a workshop or a repair shop, or all sorts of things could happen in the future. So we're looking at building people's capacity, right? Really helping people to achieve their, you know, what it is that they want to do. So these are, like, there's great potential, great potential.
Right. It did. The housing people is sort of the beginning of it. I remembered the other question. I wrote it down to make sure I remember it. We've been talking about as you know, sort of what the thing's going to look like and what's kind of going on. What do you need in terms of, like, help, you know, supplies or volunteers or whatever? You know, what is it that you have not gotten yet or not gotten enough of yet that you, if we can invite people to come into the project, if they can sort of answer those needs, what would that be?
Money.
Okay.
Some donations.
Okay.
We're looking at getting some grants and some startup funds from a few different places, but that'll be important. For things like, so far our meetings, like, we've just managed in terms of meetings and time, but we need a little more help now in terms of our strategic planning. And so we've hired a consultant, Tony Stortz, who was involved with Better Tent City. And so he's also with us now and he's helping us. So that does cost some money because that's his livelihood. And then, you know, permits and that sort of thing. And eventually building costs, because one of our partners is a builder. I mean, we have the benefit of lower cost, and also people that want to give of their time. Definitely we need to raise money there as well. In operations, we're going to need people who have experience with communication. Mm-hmm. We're going to need people that have experience with building, people that have experience once they're up. You know, we'll need things painted, we'll need landscaping, we'll need, I don't have a list of all of the different groups, but we'll have several committees, about eight of them. Yeah.
Okay. There's lots of opportunities. And I assume if someone just sends an email through the site and says, like, I don't know how I can help out, but I want to help out, you can certainly provide them with a list.
Yep. And we have a volunteer. You can just click and you can fill out the volunteer. You could just use that to say what it is you're interested in. That's the other thing. We have a volunteer. We've just sort of established our volunteer team. And so volunteer coordinator will start to organize that soon too.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Maybe to wrap up, and I want to lean on your expertise in your day job again. And we kind of been talking around it, but I kind of want to just sort of lay it out explicitly for people. When you are dealing with someone, and I mean, you see people from all walks of life, but when you are dealing with someone who has a place to live and has that comfort and that security, how does that impact them on the health side? And how does that appear, like, to someone who maybe does not have that security? You know, how do you, like, in terms of, like, the actual delivery of healthcare, what is the difference between someone who is housed and someone who is not housed?
Right. It really means everything. It means everything. You can't recover from a surgery, for example, so physical surgery. I've had clients go in and have arterial bypass and been discharged to the street.
Wow.
And so, people have lost limbs and they've been discharged to the street. I mean, it's really, it's a crisis, and you cannot get better. You have to have a place where you can convalesce.
Mm.
So people who find themselves with mental health issues, who find themselves struggling with addiction, if you're interested in changing something, it's pretty hard to do if you don't have a stable place of your own that you can go to do that, because you're in constant struggle mode. You're in survival mode all day long, right? Trying to get warm, or trying to find, you know, get out of the rain, trying to lug your stuff around. So constant survival mode. If you have a place, you have a place. You're not that big part that you've spent all your day trying to survive. You don't have to do that anymore. And you can rest, and you can, you know, put some attention to getting well.
Yeah.
It's key.
Yeah.
Key. I have a number of people that I know who have been fortunate to get a room in the past couple years and have really stabilized. It's remarkable. It's mm-hmm. remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Are we sort of any closer to, healthcare has become such a, I don't know if the lightning rod is the right word, because I mean, we've sort of seen the struggles of like funding and staffing, and, you know, pandemic put extraordinary pressures on it. But I mean, we're also struggling with trying to get like mental health treated as healthcare. We see at the federal level, they're trying to add dental care and, you know, drug coverage as, you know, part of the government delivered healthcare. And now we're kind of adding housing as healthcare too. Have you seen a change in sort of the government side of this? I mean, is it getting, maybe we don't want to divide it into, is it getting worse or is it getting better? But I mean, is just like the bureaucratic side of things, are we seeing any change in sort of looking at healthcare as more than just, you know, sort of what ails a person in the moment?
Mm-hmm. A little bit. I mean, you know, not as much as needs to happen, for sure. I don't know why. And I don't know why people don't see the crisis. I don't get it, because it really is, healthcare's in trouble. Like, we're struggling. We don't have enough resources. And by resources, I mean people. Like, we don't have enough nurse practitioners. We don't have enough primary care providers. We certainly don't have enough people working in the ER. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a real crisis on that level. And then, you know, and it's complicated. I think, mm-hmm. you know, when all those rooming houses were closed, right? How many years ago was that? Like 25, 30 years ago. I mean, this is what happens. This is what happens when you don't have housing options for people, when you haven't been building geared to income housing. It's just, of course, it's related to health and well-being.
Yeah.
So I see a little bits of it, but not enough.
I think, an important reminder that as we're trying to address a crisis quickly, the crisis wasn't created in a year or a few years. It's been decades in the making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really has.
Well, at the very least, we have community members like you who are trying to generate solutions. And to put this on the record, you know, the best of luck to you and everybody involved in the project. I think we've seen tremendous success with the Better Tent City in Waterloo region. And there's no reason why we can't duplicate that here, I think. So, yeah. Liz Hales, thank you so much for all your time today. I know you're a busy woman.
Thank you. Thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. It's fabulous. Thanks.
And once again, that was Liz Hales. To learn more about the Guelph Tiny Homes Coalition, you can go to their website, GuelphTinyHomesCommunity.org. Under the Get Involved tab, you will find a link to that volunteer form where you can give the group your information and tell them where and how you want to help out. As for the City of Guelph's own project, there's a deadline of April the 26th to hear from property owners who have land within 1 kilometer of downtown that they'd like to donate to the cause. And if that sounds like you, please send an email to purchasing@guelph.ca. And that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. You can download the Guelph Politicast every Wednesday from Apple, TuneIn, and Spotify. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you'll get an episode of Open Source's Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. You can follow the Guelph Politico social media feeds at Guelph Politico on Twitter and at Politico Guelph on Facebook. You can follow me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter and Instagram, or send me an email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. If you'd like to help financially support the work of Guelph Politico, you can get all that information at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And finally, for all the latest local political news, you can check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.